everyone. I am Andrew Beagle, also known as Tammet, here from EverQuest 2 Alakazam. With me today, I have Nancy Zito, who is also known as Gethany from EQ Tuesday, and the great Delmon doing our sound. The date is April 25th, 2007, and we're talking to Scott Hartzman, the senior producer of EverQuest 2, about the fourth EverQuest 2 expansion titled Rise of Kunark. Hello, Scott. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are so happy to have you here today.
It really is a pleasure. Now, Scott, before we begin, can you first just tell us a little bit about the expansion?
Sure, absolutely. Rise of Kunark it signifies a big direction that we wanted to take the EQ2 franchise next. After coming out with Echoes of Faedwar and realizing how much people loved seeing things that were very familiar to them but still had a new take, and how much fun, bluntly, we had making it, we decided to do the same type of thing for the next expansion. And so naturally, when we once we made up our minds there, Kunark was the natural place to go. So some of the big things that you'll be seeing are, obviously, with our last expansion, we did not do a level increase. This time we will be. Kunark is a very, 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 very dangerous land. And as such, the stuff that people had, people are going to need to be able to gear up a little bit and level up and spend some time learning the place before they just start able to come in and, you know, just decimate everything. Got a brand new race and a brand new starting area. The Sarnax are making their return, the beloved race from the original Kunark. Epic weapons will be coming back. Epics are one of the things that we've kind of put off doing until we had a huge chunk of time to do them right. A game like EQ2, when you got 24 classes, you know, that's a whole lot of quests and a whole lot of art and a whole lot of stuff that's got to get done. And so with the dev cycle that we have behind Kunark, we're pretty confident that we can get them in and make them, and make it fun for both group and raid folks. Beyond that, we're mostly going to be focused on the quality of content and the interesting environments, and the things that you'll be fighting while you're there. So that's Kunark in a nutshell, pretty much.
Sounds pretty exciting. Definitely.
Cool.
Can you give us a general rundown of some of the things that have transpired in Kunark over the last 500 years?
It's kind of interesting. You know, Kunark is not a land that got... Kunark also got kind of beat up a little bit by all the trauma that's gone on with Luklan exploding, and there was the rending, there's the shattering, there was all kinds of terrible things happening in the world, and Kunark didn't escape all of it. You've got, in general, you know, the general storyline for the past 500 years, Venril Sather is, as most people might remember from his original place in Karnor, wasn't particularly happy with his station there, and with the gods, when the gods first abandoned the lands, he saw an opportunity and he leapt on it. He moved himself back into Kabalis, and he decided to take over and started building up himself a power base there. And you know, with the gods gone, everything was just not going very well for a lot of the established races of people. And he saw the opportunity and jumped on it. So yeah, he goes back into Kabalis and starts spreading out toward the east. And what you saw over time was his base of power eventually shifted towards Sebalus, where, you know, because he wanted to retake their ancestral home, and so clean the place out and turn that into their new base of power. And it's a good thing that they did, because then, you know, the rending, the shattering, all of this, and suddenly Kabalis finds itself half above ground and half below ground, where it's just been, you know, it turned out to be on a huge fault line.
Wow.
So Kabalis is now mostly, you know, for the large part unusable. So what after that all happened, what you see is the Ixar Empire really getting rebuilt. And so Rise of Kunark, the title, is as much about the rise of the Ixar Empire again. And and how the rest of the races on Kunark have had to adjust to that. You've got, you know, the giants now are being, you know, pushed up to the north. You've got the Sarnak being pushed off to Shardok in the west, and the Ixar are slowly taking over. And so it is a war-torn land that players will be showing up on day one.
Wow.
Yeah, we're really aiming to have this all of, you know, we're really aiming to have tension, excitement, and obvious, it's supposed to be about, you know, very, very obvious conflict between these races with a solid story behind it all.
That sounds
very exciting, yeah. Let's talk about the Sarnak. Will the new player race have any special racial characteristics like the Fae did?
Yes, they will, and no, I can't talk about them yet.
They can fly?
Yeah, they spin their tails real fast, and next thing you know, one of the things that, you know, even with the Fae, we had our own doubts as to whether or not giving them a cool and useful ability was going to be a good idea or a bad idea in the end. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely walked away from the Fae going, okay, that was smart. People enjoyed it. It was fun. And so we're going to be aiming for the same kind of attraction to Sarnak that we did for Fae. Obviously not going to be flight, but we're going to be looking for something interesting for there to be. So there you go.
Okay. Now, it's been said that the Sarnak are going to actually be starting in Temoris Deep.
Yeah.
Okay. Out of curiosity, why on earth are the Sarnak in Temoris Deep? I mean, I don't recall a single one.
Yeah. There were definitely none there. Yo. So the Sarnak had their own little bit of drama going on while they found their entire race, you know, under attack. Shardok, where they live, has actually been through quite a transformation too, now being much more of a defensive position than what it was previously.
Okay.
So they, you know, these are people at war, and people at war do extreme things. We'll get into the specifics of how it happened just yet, but there's a lot of undiscovered magic and undiscovered artifacts that were unearthed by the rending and the shattering. Some of these magics got put to use in some ways that were probably very noble, of noble intent, but didn't necessarily have the greatest end result. What you're going to see is you're going to see two distinct kinds of Sarnak. You've got the kinds that are the Sarnak NPCs that people are very familiar with that still live in Shardok. Then you have this new kind of Sarnak that was essentially developed for the express purpose of fighting off the Ixar in a move of desperation, you know, survival of the race. And what happened essentially is the forces, you know, the Ixar forces essentially went on an extermination mission. And these guys became the most hunted people ever because they actually did have the power to do significant harm to the Ixar Empire. And so what you ended up with was a certain group of them being hidden away in, you know, they're tucked off in a place where they can't be found. And the idea is that the Ixar Empire is assuming right now that all of the Sarnaks who are now a threat to them are dead. And so as a brand new Sarnak, you come into this world and you are one of the ones that is destined to be the powerful ones to go back against the Ixar Empire. And you're doing this from the safety of growing up in the islands of Temoris Deep.
Genetically engineered Sarnak. I love it.
Possibly magically engineered? Artifactually engineered? Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not your it's not your $6 million Sarnak, but much more of a result of artifacts and experimentation that way.
Gotcha. Okay.
I can't wait to see what they look like.
Yeah, same here.
It's kind of neat. We've got some of the early ones, and we actually as far as our internal development, that is the area that we are developing first.
Okay.
We are very much wanting to make sure that that experience is the one that has the most weeks and months of polish associated with it, because it's just so important to get right, because it mm-hmm. really sets the stage for everything else that's going to be happening in the expansion.
Awesome. Will there be any new AA points increases or new AA trees or anything like that?
So we're not going to do an entire brand new tree. What we're probably going to do this time is there's a couple things that we're looking at right now. We know that there's some abilities that we want to change around a little bit. We know that there's some enhancements that we want to make to some of the existing trees, both in terms of, you know, in terms of desirability, in terms of the need to wield certain weapons, all that kind of thing. So we know that there are things we want to do to achievements, but it's not going to be, look, it's a whole gigantic new tree. You end up with... If you make all of the additions desirable, we would end up fragmenting different classes even further.
Right.
And right now there are plenty of different individual ways to customize each class.
Okay.
So we don't necessarily want to add another dimension there. But yeah, we do want to do some touch-ups there.
Great.
Will we see a guild level increase with the rise of Kunark?
Absolutely, yeah. If we decided this time that we were going to do, we were going to get the guild levels caught up to the adventure levels and the trade skill levels. So everything by the time all is said and done will be a flat level cap of 80. And we're looking at making sure there's some interesting new rewards pretty much all along the way there too. So yeah, instead of having this disconnect where one level cap is one thing and one is another thing, it's going to be 80.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Wow. So that's going to be significantly harder for guilds to level up during this expansion then.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be, it is definitely not going to be, at least it shouldn't be, save up all of your stuff and suddenly you're level 80 on day one.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That shouldn't be the case anymore.
Good, good, good. Well, can you tell us about the new epic weapons? Are the quests similar to the epic lines in quests now, or are they more like the traditional EverQuest epic?
Yeah, it's all text, and the words are in brackets, and then you have to speak to the... Oh, no, wait, sorry. No,
it's... Ragefire!
and you have to camp Ragefire. No.
Yay.
Yes and no. There are some similarities, there are some differences. Places where they're similar is, yes, this is going to be something that all members of a class are going to want. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
The place that it's going to be slightly different from the original EverQuest epics is going to be, we're starting them out at the level of legendary, meaning you should be able to start along your epic path and get a good, powerful, and interesting reward for it without. And so, and that's a good thing.
That is
and
cool.
Yeah, it's a very good thing.
Yeah, and then later on, you'll be able to progress and upgrade your weapon as you continue through the depth of this quest line, and do start taking part in harder group activities, and eventually moving on to raid activities. So the idea is. We're not treating them as an entitlement, like just because I play a necromancer means I get my necro epic. It is going to be effort, it is going to be a challenge, but it's not going to be restricted to, but rewards for the series will not be restricted to raiders only.
Okay.
And so that's really important to us.
Now when epics came out in Kunark and EverQuest, they were kind of designed, or that's how I had conceived it being designed, that they were, you know, only supposed to be obtained by certain individuals and not the entire server. You know, they were supposed to be exclusive in a sense. Are, like, the final versions of these epics going to be just uber hard to get, or are they going to be something that someone who raids can get them with a little bit
so
of time and effort?
That's a very good question. What we're looking to do with these is we're looking to make sure... We refer to that as what's your gating factor? You know, what's the rare... In order for there to be a certain amount of rarity, there has to be a gating factor.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big points of frustration, and anyway, this is my opinion, one of the big points of frustration that happened with a lot of the original EQ epics was the gating factor was always rare and long spawns. Rare long contested spawns, whether that was Kazakh Fool, or whether that was Ragefire, or whether that was, and those things turned out to be an excellent way to make sure that there were very few epics,
right.
Or there was a very steady, controlled stream of epics coming into the world at a predictable rate.
Mm-hmm.
These days, 2007, people really don't balance MMOs that way anymore. And, you know, EQ doesn't even balance, you know, their later upgrades. They, you know, don't make those mistakes of the past either. And in a lot of ways, we have, you know, we've been learning a lot from the EverQuest Live team as they've enhanced and changed their way of doing work too. So, what we'll be doing is we're going to be trying to make sure our quests are gated on the difficulty of events, the difficulty of quests, your ability to find other people to go help. You know, it's things that are in your control to go do. What we will not be doing is having you sit on a spot for 3 days hoping that some guy's going to spawn. There's no need to control player action to that level. It's just not important for the overall health of the game, really. The most important thing is to make sure that when a person logs on, their next step is in their control. Not at the control of some arbitrary delay. So we like the good parts of the original EverQuest Epics, which was everybody had a cool way, and there was this feeling of brotherhood with other people in your of your class who all went through the same stuff. And you know, you see the weapon, you go, I know you killed Kazakh Thule because you have this thing. Congratulations. You know, and without the bad parts of you have your cleric one. You must have sat in Saul B for 9 weeks. I'm so sorry. You know, so so we're aiming for power, and we're aiming for a satisfying quest, but we're not aiming for all the frustration that occurred in the first generation.
Okay.
Well, thank you, because I was a ranger in the first generation, and it was 2 years before I got my second sword.
Please, wow. I was a cleric who did my epic twice. Give me a break.
Well, the thing was, you had to get those stones, and so many people wanted those stones, and they didn't drop, and it took a really long time to get the sword.
Yeah, you're right. No one wanted rage fire.
Yeah, see, I was actually about to complain, because I was a wizard, and I'm fairly certain that I set a record for Finnegal Ultra Poe kills between drops. But yeah, compared to doing two cleric epics, yeah. I got nothing. Sorry, no, I got nothing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually joking around with the guild of folks that I currently play with, who I also played with back in the day, and one of them brought up the 97,000 times we had to kill that friggin' fish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the Kunark zones in EverQuest. Mm-hmm. In my travels through Rise of Kunark, will I recognize any of my ancestors' old hunting grounds?
That actually brings up something that we're doing differently this time. Previously, what you would have seen as soon as you do an expansion is the first thing we tell you is we have blah exactly many zones, and we have blah exactly many quests and weapons and all that stuff. We're kind of going about the way we do zones a little bit differently. Yes, short answer is yes, you're going to see a lot of familiar things. What you're also going to see is an expansion on what we did for Echoes of Faedwar, where you know how the overall outdoor region size got just a little bit bigger. You know, you take a butcher block and you compare it to, an enchanted lance, and it's like, well, butcher block is, you know, friggin' ginormous. You could fit 3 zones in there. So what we're doing is we're actually expanding on that theme even further. Instead of just making our outdoor areas single zones, we're making them bigger, and we're making them full-on regions of the continent. And so the continent is broken up into a number of these regions. Within each of these regions, you're going to find very distinct zones that will have some familiarity. But it's just going to be, yes, the environment's going to change, the sky, you know, the lighting will change, the sky changes. You get a little pop-up on screen that says, you know, entering the burning wood, but you didn't have to zone to do that.
Cool.
So it's
cool.
There will still be zoning between these big huge regions, but again, the zoning shouldn't be any worse user experience than it was in Echoes of Faedwar. And so you'll be able to see a whole lot of areas that you did see in the past. And so we're actually really, really excited about that, because one of the things that we've always wanted to do is make make zoning less of a factor when it comes to gameplay.
More seamless. And
exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, you can't really ever take one of these zoned worlds and make them fully seamless, at least not on the scale that we that our world is, but we can do stuff with these ginormous regions that we have now. You know, now that we're a few years in, the engine's optimized a whole lot better than it ever has been before, and so we're able to do things like have a field of bone, and we can have, you know, Dreadlands and Burning Wood. We can have a lot of these areas that you're familiar with, but you'll be actually be playing in a larger region.
Cool.
And so, but then there's the standard complement of dungeons and instances that'll be around too. So yeah, then and it is not 100% copied from Ark either. It's again similar Echoes of Fade were. Yes, there are going to be some things that make you go, okay, this is cool. I know this. This is awesome.
Uh-huh.
But by the same token, there are new places, both overland and in dungeons, that that are either creations of the Shattering, or things, or especially in the case of at least one dungeon, was a long lost area that was unearthed by, and access was gained because of the Shattering and the way that, and the fact that that the planet shifted. Really,
I see. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So here's the question: am I going to be able to quad kite raptors in Timor's Deep? No, I'm serious.
Possibly. I know. Honestly, I would not expect that to be a feature of this expansion. I really wouldn't. And again, you know, it's, again, speaking as a guy who played a wizard in EverQuest, bluntly,
uh-huh.
I think it would be hilarious if we that kind of thing in there. But especially since Timorous Deep, Timorous Deep is going to be it's now going to be a level 1 through 20 starting zone that is going to be the standard quest path for both new Sarnax and other neutral races.
Oh.
And so you're going to be able to see people starting up that way also. And so it really wouldn't work for, you know, to have high-end critters out there. It's like, oh, I'm going to swim over an island and see what's over here! You know, exactly.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But yeah, so, and then there's, you know, a full city. The city of Gorowin is also out there, which is the city that they've made for themselves, which will have all standard city functions. And so yeah, it's yet another starting area in EQ2 that is not the Isle of Refuge. And as far as we're concerned, giving people racially distinct starting areas is a really, really good thing for the game and for the community. So.
And it's going to be neutral.
Neutral is pretty much what we're going with right now. We might tweak that, so you don't get to call me a liar if that turns out to not be the case.
Okay.
But this would be when I say neutral, I don't mean all races. When I say neutral, I mean the races that can start in either place.
Okay.
Plus
okay.
Sarnax.
Gotcha.
So it's not going to be a yes, this is a place where everybody can start. It's
uh-huh.
This is a place where some subset can start, and the subset we're working with right now is the neutral ones.
Gotcha. Okay.
Cool.
In comparison to Kunark in EverQuest, how large is this expansion going to be?
I would have to say it is on par with or bigger.
Wow.
And, and that's in terms of just, you know, the square acreage. Square acreage? That doesn't make sense. The acreage, there.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, in terms of the area, you're probably looking at same size or bigger. And that is no mean feat, just because of the fact that Kunark was, by and large, the largest EQ expansion ever. And
uh-huh.
making areas like that in EQ2 is significantly more time-intensive than it was back in the day when making art was way simpler.
Right.
So we're aiming for, that's what we're aiming for. I don't know if we're going to get there, but at the end of the day, the thing that we tell the teams here is pretty simple. I would rather ship three gigantic regions that are as polished and fun as they can possibly be than four or five that where the quality just drops off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd rather we go back and rewrite story and redo some population and redo some leveling flow if it means that what we ship is the most fun and most polished it can possibly be. You know, if it came down to it and we had to ship the single best, you know, the one best region in the history of mankind in order to get it out the door, we'd still aim for quality. I think you know, Kingdom of Sky was the first big step that we took in that direction, and then Echoes of Fade were really nailed at home, where it's like, no, you have to do this. You absolutely positively have to. You know, your review scores go up, community reaction goes up, you start to have people really going, holy crap, this game is worth coming and checking out again, you know. And so we just, you know, we set a high bar last time. And to this day, I'm still proud of every single person that worked on that. They did a stellar job, and all the folks working on this one definitely have a whole lot to live up to.
Great.
Would you tell us a bit about some of the new zones?
What would you like to know? Whatever?
Yes, whatever.
So the new, you know, some of the new places are going to be very familiar, as I had said earlier. I unfortunately don't want to get too much just yet into what the new places are all going to be. We have a whole lot of them designed out, but again, not everything that makes it on paper actually makes it to launch day, just because we're going to aim for quality more than a specific content spread.
Okay.
But so, you know, the first place that we talked about, obviously, Timorous Deep. Timorous Deep is, it's an ocean full of islands, brand new city of Gorwin. And that area is going to be level 1 to 20. Once you get beyond that, it's, you know, the Sarnak storyline there, for those folks that are starting out brand new characters, their whole story is about getting back home and, you know, rejoining their race and finding out what happened. Because really, so much time has gone on, these people are exiles. They are, you know, it's essentially the classic hero's journey, where it's, they go through this period of innocence. They go through the rediscovering the fact that there's an outside world, and then there's the eventual triumphant return home to defeat the bad guys, and be reunited with their own history. And so that journey will take them through, you know, from Timorous Deep back to the old world, up through Kingdom of Sky, even Kingdom of Sky and Desert of Flames, if people choose to go level up there, and then come back over to Kunark, to where the real bad guys live. And so you're going to see places like Skyfire Mountains. You're going to see the Over There. You're going to see Sebalus, obviously. You're going to see Shardock, and you're going to see what else? Emerald Jungle. City of Mist. When coming up with this, we did not say we need to ship every single area that was in original Kunark. What we did do, though, was we took the ones that we felt, I'm going to invent a word, were the most Kunarky, and that were the most archetypal of both the leveling experience and the high level experience to the most players. And make sure that we were able to get all of those areas out there, and then add our own brand new areas on top of that. So that's really the goals of what we were aiming for, and that's some of the zones you're going to see.
Well, it's nice to know some of the familiar stomping grounds are going to be there.
Yeah.
What made SOE decide to go with Rise of Kunark as the next expansion instead of... what is it, Odious or Otis? I can't even.
Otis.
I forget
Otis?
If there's an I. Otis or Velius.
You know, that was the rumor for a while.
Oh, yeah, there were all kinds of good rumors out there for a while. And I may have even helped one of them.
There's that one, the one guy in Kingdom of Sky mm-hmm. that you go talk to, and he gates himself back to Otis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, that was enough to get people starting.
Yeah, I mean, so again, this came down to really what did we think would be received the best? You know, what is going to be right for EQ2 at this particular moment in time? Right now, making the last one, it was received so well, and it was so much fun for us to make. We wanted to make sure that we were making stuff where our passion would be able to show through. You know, the best developed games are the ones where the developers are passionate about what they're making. And bluntly, Kunark was the play. When we all talked about it, it was very, very hard to find a person on this team who did not want to do Kunark, which is actually kind of, it really even surprised me, because we have a number of people in our art department who worked on the original EverQuest Kunark. You know, the artist who did Sebalus is here, the artist who did Chirassus is here, the artist who did Shardock is here. And so, bluntly, I was expecting to hear, dude, I've done that already. Come on, I don't want to... No. But instead, literally, what we heard back from everybody who worked on Kunark was, are you kidding? I would love to do Kunark in this engine. I would love to do Kunark the way that, you know, I couldn't do it back then. And so I was literally shocked, and I am so not making that up. You can ask these guys at Fanfare, and they will tell you the same thing themselves. Yeah, it truly did surprise me. I was honestly expecting to hear, dude, I've done that already.
No, I've
no.
That.
It was all, I'm psyched. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really a lot. It was a combination of this is bluntly what we wanted to be making, as well as we kind of assumed this is what the players would want to see the most.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the answer. I look forward to seeing it because it's like comparing the two unrests, the unrest here.
Right.
So I really can't wait to see what they're going to do with the old dungeons. It'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. The scale on these things is just massive. So we'll see how it all works out. But man, I got to tell you, I mean, just you know, going through our milestone reviews, I've seen some of the biggest interiors I think I've ever seen in my entire life. So it's fun stuff.
Wonderful. Can you talk about the three gods returning to Norrath?
Unfortunately, not so much. I mean, yes, we are going to be having a few of the gods coming back. We are going to be having a couple of new religions for people to join up with, but right now that's not an area where I'm the guy who's going to be able to talk about a whole lot that makes sense. We've got some things that we've been playing with internally. We kind of like where we're going with it, and we'll probably be able to talk a little bit more about it once we get closer to like Fanfare time.
Okay.
and the couple of weeks leading up to that.
Now, when you say new, do you mean brand new or just brought back from EverQuest?
Oh, returned.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean returned gods.
That's
yes.
Okay, no problem.
Oh, yes.
Wanted to clarify.
Good question. Thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah, so there are definitely more gods who've come back. You know,
okay.
the ongoing storyline. You know, the ongoing storyline. It's just time for that to happen. You
mm-hmm.
know, there's so much activity going on. There's so much. There's so many battles going on with these powerful historical figures that have either, had sought to take the gods' places, and it's making the rest of them wake up and take notice.
Great. Can you tell me if old Celibus survived? I'd really like to know.
Would it be a Kunark if you couldn't go kill Celibus?
Oh, good.
I'm pretty sure the answer to that question
and
is no.
And a big disease-ridden dragon?
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's the thing with Trakanon. You know, I made no secret about the fact that Venril and the Ixar Empire decided to retake their home of Sebalus.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that does beg the question, what of Trakanon?
Mm-hmm.
Suffice it to say, we haven't forgotten about him. What exactly has gone on with Trakanon's past is part of... what does need to be discovered in the expansion.
Great.
But yes, expect him to not be forgotten about. Let's
cool.
put it that way.
Gets me excited. Is there anything else that we missed or you wanted to touch on before we end this?
Are you kidding me? You guys asked more than... you guys stretched my knowledge of this expansion. Let me put it that way. No, this is fantastic. The only other new stuff is we are doing another mount this time. Right now we're looking at... Kunarki and Rhino, everybody's favorite baby from the over there, and we are also looking into doing both a standard retail box as well as a limited edition includes more cool stuff, more cool toys, collector's edition also. So
no, another box for my shelf.
and this one will be very likely limited, as in we will do one run and that will be it, you know, these kinds of things, they're just cool to be able to do every so often. And when we threw the idea out to the team, so many people came up with ideas for, oh, we could do this. Oh, we could include this. Oh, we could include this. And we were like, okay, we need to go ask if we can do this. And so far, it looks like we're going to be able to.
Awesome. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come join us today. It's been a real pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have you as a guest, and I look forward to doing this again in the future.
Well, you know I love talking to you guys, so that's all cool by me. Yeah. And if I don't see you before, then I'll see you at FanFare.
All right.
Definitely we'll be there.
And thank you everyone for listening.